with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back into the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Jonathan Von Tobel in for Michael today. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're live at our VSiN studio in downtown Las Vegas, just outside of Circa Sportsbook at Circa Resort and Casino. Appreciate you hanging out with us today, wherever you're watching YouTube TV, iHeartRadio, listening from. We're just happy that you joined us today. It is, in addition to all the NFL stuff that we talk on a daily basis here on the show, college football week. So a lot of college football that we're discussing today as well. We will have Mike Somich, professional handicapper, join us in about 15 minutes. We'll go through all of the week one NFL models with JVT at the end of the hour, but we're going to start off talking college football home field advantage. There is a great article in the College Football Betting Guide that came out today, which you can get your hands on at VSiN.com if you become a VSiN Pro subscriber. From our guy Adam Burke, just kind of breaking down the different tiers of home field advantage and what it might be worth to us as bettors. Because I think for a long time, there was just this general theory out there that like home field advantage, 3 points, just slap that into your handicap. And that's just not the reality of how it is.
No, not at all. And there's different ways to measure it. And in college, this is the one thing too. For every sport, it's different as well. And you generally, it varies season to season. Y'all bring in the sport that I covered day to day. For us, it's the NBA. The season that just passed, home court was worth about 3 points, maybe a little bit more. The season prior was actually only worth 1.5. So you always have to measure. Every season is different as well. You always want to be adjusting because that's the thing, right? You always want to see. You want to be ahead of the curve, not behind it, because that puts you behind the eight ball as a better. And so, no, every home field is a little bit different, and every advantage is going to be different. And the way you measure it is really important, too, because you could come out with different results. You know, a lot of handicappers like the median results, which will give you a single number. You can do averages. Those will give you different. You know, I just did it really quickly. If you go back to last year in the NFL, for example, the median result for a home team was plus two, or a two-point win. The average result was 1.8, so there's a small difference there. So it always depends. Adam's measuring it a little bit different here, but at the very end, you know, you want to make sure that you're in line with this, because the important part, Stormy, is if you're ahead of what a market wants to do with the home field, then you're at an advantage because you're more accurate with however you're doing this than any other. So, for example, I'll bring it back one more time to the NBA really quickly. That year that home court was worth 1.5, I was a little bit more successful because I had made the adjustment before it seemed the market had. But the following year, I was rolling with 1.5, and I mentioned it was actually just over 3. So I was behind the eight ball initially, and I started, you know what I mean? So it's very important to get this because a difference of 1-2 points could make the difference for you as a handicapper.
And that, to your point, as the season goes on, you can adjust and make those tweaks to make the appropriate number. What Adam has laid out is essentially the overall number is going to be closer to 2 as that median average, but there are going to be teams that are on the better end of having a more significant home field advantage and teams that are not. He went through the last 5 years of straight up and against the spread data to come up with his numbers of who had the more and less valuable home fields. Also made sure to add, which is true, that there are singular game exceptions for certain, like the Penn State whiteout, for example, or, you know, Death Valley night game in a college football hungry type of a town at night on primetime. Like, there are certain elements that can be a little bit different. And you'll also notice, too, just thematically, that a lot of the teams that have the best home field advantage also have the best overall win percentage, right? Like, the better teams in general are probably going to play better at home or on the road, just because they're better teams organizationally in the facets of their scheme and the way that they play the game. For example, Alabama, you look at them being worth 3.5 points home field based on the last 5 years of data that Adam collected. Well, they're also riding the current longest win streak at home in the nation right now. And they're a team that is regularly in the top 5 of your AP polls on a week in and week out basis. So these types of things just come into account as you go through.
And I think it's important too, when you're looking at some of these, is, you know, again, like, you don't want to just focus on the big boys. So for example, you know, at the very bottom of this list, where you look at some of the teams that have the stronger home fields, UAB is there, right? I don't think initially people would be like, UAB, what do you, well, yeah, it's a strong home field. They perform well, as you mentioned. This is 5 years worth of data that you're factoring in. So while you see on this list a lot of recognizable brands, remember that all of these teams, of course, have their different home fields and play in conferences, so it matters to them. So teams like James Madison, UAB, like, those are important to note as well. It's not just these big teams, these strong teams that have these strong power ratings at home. Some of these teams have performed well throughout their entire tenures, even though they play in lesser conferences.
Yeah, UCF in the Bounce House, Oregon and Autzen Stadium. Utah, I think Rice-Eccles Stadium has been a home field advantage that people don't talk about enough necessarily, and they've been undefeated at home each of the last two seasons, including that win at home against USC that came down to the wire, and I know some people still want to get mad at officiating for that one, but it's a win at home against a team that was one of the best in the country last year.
I can't remember. There was did you go to Memphis last year?
I did, yes.
Yeah, so how was that, too? Because they're on this list, right?
It was the back end of the season. They did win the game that I had, but it was the back end of the season where they were a little rough.
Oh, okay, all right.
So just food for thought there. But Cincinnati, they're, even with this, I think that there are some exceptions where you have to make sure you're doing your due diligence and research, because while Cincinnati had one of the best home field advantages over the last 5 years, they also had consistency in their coaching staff and Luke Fickell being there for the last 5 years. It's a very different situation that they're coming into in 2023.
Can I skip to a list really quickly, because I wanted to make a point? So if we could go to his power ratings for the 2.5 points, right? So not the strongest home fields that are out there. So on the list, you know, you have Auburn, you have BYU, Florida Atlantic, Fresno State. But at the very bottom of the list, when I was looking through this, when I knew we were going to talk about it, one that really stuck out, I think a lot of people, if you were to ask, what's one of the stronger home fields? What's a tough trip to make? People would look at that very last team on that list, which would be Wyoming.
72-20.
Yep, right. And playing in altitude, and especially in the winter months, it's sloppy and it's gross, and people hate going out there. Seems like it's not one of the stronger home fields. Only worth 2.5 points, but there might be a lot of people who overfactor that into their handicapping. So when we were getting ready for this and looking through that, that's something that immediately stuck out to me, because I think a lot of people generally, once you get into the season, especially into those winter months, might overvalue what a trip to Wyoming means for a lot of visiting teams. And at the very least, at least according to this data that Adams crunched together, not worth as much as you might think.
Meanwhile, for Air Force, they are the full 3 points, according to this model. But also in the 2.5, because we can stay there for a moment, one that surprised me in this spot was Oregon State, because I know, like, no team has covered more games in its home building since 2020 than the Beavers. So maybe that's taking more into account the couple years prior, because like I said, this is a 5-year sample size versus what they've done in the last 3 years under Jonathan Smith. And this past season, we talk about them like being able a cover machine essentially the last couple of years at home. That's with last season them going through a stadium reconstruction where they were only able to have seating on half of the stadium. So like all, like I think it was, they only had 28,000 or so people there, and they're all on one side of the stadium because of the reconstruction. That's complete, and they'll be able to fill the stands this year.
Yeah, and that's a really strong point, too, is, again, well, there's 5 years of data, of course. Things change and evolve over time. So, again, when we go back to the point of trying to be behind, you know, ahead of the curve as opposed to behind it, so while Adam's data here, and if we got to talk to Adam, I'm sure you'd agree, like, right, like, the data here would say Oregon State maybe worth 2.5 points. But to your point, if you look at last year, the year before, it's been a very strong home team. Maybe worth ratcheting it up. Not too much. Maybe a point, maybe a half a point. But just kind of getting ahead and giving them a little bit more due when they play at home, because the last two seasons have been so good for them.
Yeah, and so it does take some individual research on your part. You know, like, can't do all the work for you, but.
Oh, yeah. Like, I would very much stress, like, I don't, like, Adam's done a great job here, but again, I think you want to look at things and again, always try to change and evaluate. You don't want to just take this and blindly plug it in.
Correct.
Use this as the base for what you're going to do moving forward.
What about some of these teams with poor home field advantage? Like, yes, there are some teams that are typically just a team that you fade on a year in and year out basis regardless, right? Like, the Zips are not exactly a team that's high on the priority list of betting on in Akron, right? So any teams that stood out to you as like, yeah, that seems about right, or that surprised you?
Not really. I mean, I think when you look at it overall, I mean, I guess, nothing crazy. Because if you look at it generally with what we're watching, right, with these teams, there's a common thread of, like, frankly, the programs just haven't been very good. You see this with the home field advantage of 1 point. Akron, Georgia Tech, New Mexico, UMass, and Vanderbilt. Which of those has been the perennial powerhouse for the last few years, right? None of them have been very good. So it's not really surprising that the results have been poor at home, and thus the home field advantage really isn't that worth that much. And if you go to 1.5, again, as we're talking about maybe improving as you move forward, right, evolving as a handicapper, trying to see what the adjustment is going to be, you know, let's go to a team like Kansas, for example. You know, Kansas last season was a little bit better than we thought. They were 7-5-1 against the spread, although they went 6-7 or whatever their record was throughout the entire season. Right, and at the tail end of the year, they stopped covering numbers, but 3 of their last 4 were true road games when you looked at the way the schedule went down. But I think Kansas is maybe a team that when you look at it, prior to that last stretch again, I mean, you were talking about a cover at home against Oklahoma State. They did it against TCU, depending on what number you got. And then at the beginning of the year, too, games against Iowa State, Duke. Like, those were performances that they performed very well and beat the crap out of Tennessee Tech. Maybe this is another evolving, for, you know, another evolving home field advantage that Kansas seems to be a program on the rise, right, and maybe you want to adjust a little bit more.
And we talked a little bit earlier in the show about Clemson, and how that's a team that you're high on this year. And as we were analyzing their schedule, you're talking about some of the teams that they play and that they get to play them at home because Death Valley is such an advantage for them.
And they're 3.5 points, right? We're at the home field. So that's what you mean. Like, this, and this is one of the things in college football. This is one of the things I've had to adjust as a handicapper in college football, which is, like, in the NFL, as we talked about, home field really isn't worth that much. Travel's a lot easier for all these guys, yada, yada, yada. But in college, it's a lot different, whether it's the intensity of the environment, whether it's having to travel, having to deal with school as a student, whatever it's going to be. And so if you do have a strong home field and you get those key games at home like Clemson does this year, it makes all the difference in the world when you're talking about projecting forward for some of these teams.
Again, last year they had their first loss in what was a 40-game home win streak, falling to South Carolina, and even that was just by 1 point. They have been dominant in Clemson, South Carolina. Okay, we've got to step aside, take our first break of hour two. But when we return, we'll have professional handicapper Mike Somich join the program, get his perspective. I feel like he always comes locked and loaded with futures and MLB daily bets. So we'll see what he has for us today. And then we're going to close out the last half hour of the show looking at the JVT John Vaughn model for week one lines. Great stuff. Stay with us. More to come on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
After hearing Brent's wonderful voice, what better way to start this read than soon you will be looking live at the 2023 college football season, and VSiN is here to help. Our college football betting guide has best bets from our writers and on-air personalities, along with team previews for all 133 FBS teams. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, this is how you can do it. Now's the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. The college football betting guide out now. And our subscriptions include an all-access pass to VSiN best bets, betting tools, and daily articles. You can sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Make sure you get in there, that college football betting guide out now. You can also get the NFL betting guide when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And we have the NFL on our television screens today. The Hall of Fame game taking place in Canton, Ohio. The Jets, a 1.5 to 2 point favorite, taking on the Browns, total 33.5. To help us break down that game and more, we bring in professional handicapper Mike Somich. Does a great job here on VSiN as well, at SamaBomb18. Mike, you got some action for us in the very first preseason game. We got football on our TV.
How could I not, right? We get the NFL back here. You got to get involved in some way, shape, or form. Looking forward to this one on NBC at 5 o'clock. These Hall of Fame games are interesting. Over the last 10 years, we've seen an average of just over 29 points. So I'm surprised we're set at a 33.5 total. We know we're not going to get any Aaron Rodgers. We're going to get a little bit of Zach Wilson. But we've consistently heard from this Jets side that they're going to have a really vanilla playbook for them. So I don't expect them to be that explosive offensive early. On the Browns side, we're not going to see either their starter or their backup quarterback. So it's going to be all third and fourth stringers for the Browns at quarterback. To me, all this points toward the under. So I like the under 33.5 here in this game. I do lean toward the Jets. They were one of the preseason darlings last year. They went 3-0. And a lot of times what you'll see is that these head coaches take different approaches in these preseason games. It seemed like Robert Saleh wanted to win them last year, which is one of the reasons you've seen some of that money coming on the Jets. But I'm a little hesitant to lay the full 2 points here. A lot more preseason games land on one or two than regular season games. So I would rather take the Jets money line if I was going to play anything here on the side. But to me, under that 33.5 total is a pretty good look.
Yeah, so, and that's what I did too, by the way, Mike. I did the Jets money line approach.
So yeah, Mike, I don't.
Go ahead.
I don't want to lay the two with the Jets here. I do like the Jets second half. If we do have a close spread at half, I think Jets second half is a good look. One of their players last year, Chris Staver, was 3-0 in the preseason. He's one of those kind of just go out there and play ball kind of guys. Should fit well with Hackett. So I do like Jets second half if the game is close at halftime. If it's a blowout or if I'm having to lay, you know, 5-6 points, I'm not interested. But if I can get Jets minus a half, minus a point in the second half. That'll be another look for me. But to me, the under is the best spot in this game.
Any general philosophies when betting preseason games?
Do your research. It's kind of like the NBA regular season in some ways. You got to figure out who is in and who is out of these games. And when you do, take a look at all the markets. Last year, I remember one of my biggest preseason bets was actually New England Patriots first to 15 race. It was a situation where we found out they were going to play Mac Jones and their opponent was going to sit their starters. And they got up to a 7-point favorite, but they were minus 110 first to 15. So make sure you look at those ancillary markets once you see the official announcements of who is playing and who is not playing, because those will be slower to adjust than the point spread. So to me, this is the preseason's one where you have to kind of dig a little bit more. It's not as simple as just, you know, play a side, play a total. You got to take a look at the full market to make sure you're getting the best value, but make sure that you know who is in or out, specifically at the quarterback position, because that makes a huge difference in these games.
Yeah, and that just reinforces a thought process that doing your research, something that we talked about a little bit earlier in the show, is that I know it's tedious, but if you are going through and listening to some of these press conferences, if you have the notifications on for beat writers who are in the know, all of these things can really help form your opinion. It's that season too, right? It's notification season for the NFL and some of those insider updates. Let's push it forward to some of these futures markets, though, because I know Sean Payton's obviously been in the news a lot over this past week for the comments on his predecessor in Denver, Nathaniel Hackett, but still people believe this Broncos team could be headed in a different direction under Sean Payton's tutelage, because I know that's your favorite word, JVT, so I'm throwing that in there for you. But with that, Coach of the Year, I see is something that you've been looking into for Sean Payton.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised with myself that I'm betting this one. I was not expecting to take a Sean Payton Coach of the Year ticket, but the more you dive into it, the more I think it's a pretty good look in this spot. The win total right now is sitting at 8.5 for the Broncos. The adjusted win total is 9.5 plus 175. I like this Broncos team specifically because of their defense. Look, their offense needs to improve. We all know that. Russell Wilson needs to be better. We all know that. But I do believe that Sean Payton will make a big-time difference just from a scheming and play-calling perspective. This Broncos team was 29th in the NFL in pre-snap penalties, both offensively and defensively. That's a direct shot at the coach. You got to be better getting play calls in. And when you look at the film from last year, some of the situations that Russell Wilson was put in were just atrocious. Now, yeah, his throws weren't great. There were other issues there. But the situational spots, I did not like at all from that Nathaniel Hackett coach Broncos team. And now we're seeing, you know, Sean Payton come in, who is an offensive guy, should be able to turn this offense around at least a little bit. And I think that's all you really need. This secondary is elite from Denver. And when you look up and down their schedule, I think they can get to 10 or 11 wins. Now they're plus 550 to win the division. If they win this division, Sean Payton should be even money to win Coach of the Year, because he will get it. And when you look around at the other Coach of the Year prospects, the teams that are going to win a lot of games, the Chiefs, the 49ers, the Eagles, I don't see any of them getting this award unless you see a 16-1, 15-2 type season. When you look at the winner last year, Brian Daboll, he improved that Giants team exponentially. I expect you're going to see that type of record improvement here from Denver. So getting 11-1 on Sean Payton to win Coach of the Year, I think, has quite a bit of value in it.
Would you also recommend sprinkling a little bit on the Broncos to make the playoffs too, right? About plus 185 to 2-1, because those things obviously are heavily correlated.
I do like the Broncos to make the playoffs. One bet I put in on the Broncos as well that I thought was really interesting over on DraftKings was if you go with exact order of finish in the AFC West, you can get Kansas City Chiefs, who I think are the logical winner of the division, then Broncos second, Chargers third, Raiders fourth, and I think the Raiders are pretty locked into that last spot, at plus 650. To me, there's a ton of value in that because the Broncos could miss the playoffs and you could still see them see that specific order of finish there in the AFC West, and plus 650 seems like quite a bit of value.
Brian Daboll won the Coach of the Year a year ago, but you're fading this Giants team in 2023. What don't you like other than the schedule, or maybe the schedule is part of the reason?
It's a big part of it. Look, the offensive line struggles on the Giants side to me are a big issue. And early in the season, this schedule is just brutal. They take on the Cowboys, the Niners, the Seahawks, the Dolphins, and the Bills in the first 6 weeks. I don't see how they come out of that better than 1-5. And when you have a win total sitting at 7.5, and you expect them to come out at 1-5, it's tough to get to 8 wins, and it doesn't get any easier. They take on the Eagles late in the year twice. They also have matchups against the Packers, the Saints, the Cowboys, the Patriots. I mean, it's just a brutal schedule up and down. And when you look at what they did last year, a big part of it was a weak schedule. They were able to get a lot of wins early. They were 7-2 before finishing the season at 9-7-1. I'm not sure how they replicate that early season success. And this is one of those spots where I don't think the Giants think they can replicate that success. I think this is a team that, look, they understand what they have. They've got 2 years here with Daniel Jones under the current contract. This is a year where they want to be able to see whether or not, or what they have in Daniel Jones, how he's able to perform, maybe get a top 10 pick, and then next year's the year where they go out and get that number one weapon. So for me, this is a Giants team that just the expectations don't match up with what I expect from them on the field. Last year was a lot of smoke and mirrors. It's going to be hard to replicate that smoke and mirrors. And the quarterbacks they faced last year, not very good. This year, you are facing a lot of elite quarterbacks, and that's going to cause a lot of trouble on that defensive side of the ball, especially for a young secondary.
All right, with that, let's talk about their brethren, kind of. San Francisco Giants playing host to the Arizona Diamondbacks today. Scott Alexander's getting the start, and is it Brendan Fakt, I think, or Fakt is the way that you pronounce his last name. What are you doing in this matchup here that starts at 12:45 p.m. Pacific time?
Yeah, we're fading Brendan Fakt here. He has not been good this year.
No.
Eight of his nine starts, he's given up three earned or more. He's given up six or seven multiple times in those starts. And this is an Arizona Diamondbacks team that has just been atrocious. They are 5-13 since the All-Star break. They're just fading here. And we kind of expected that. They overachieved early in the first half. You felt there was some regression coming. Well, that regression has hit them straight in the face. And they're a great team to be betting against right now. San Francisco, on the other hand, has been playing very good baseball. They've already won two out of three in this series. And they're one of the better organizations when you look at these bullpen games. Over the last 4 years, they've been one of the best in the majors when throwing out a bullpen game. That's what we're doing today. I think they're able to keep the bats of Arizona quiet early, and I think they get to Brendan Fakt. So give me minus a half run, first five, plus 107.
You're also on the Astros today, I see.
Yeah, another situation where I think we got the wrong favorite in this spot. The Astros are minus 101 in some places, Yankees minus 109, minus 110. This Yankees team, they've not been good. Look, they got Judge back 6 games ago. They're 2-4 in those 6 games. They're 7-10 over their last 17. The Astros, on the other hand, have figured this out. They're playing very good baseball, 12-6 since the All-Star break. To me, this pitching matchup is about even with a slight edge toward the Astros, and I'm getting the better lineup and the hotter team. So I'm willing to, you know, lay a short minus here with the Astros. Make sure you shop around on this one. I've seen Astros minus 120 in some places. I've seen Astros minus 101 in others. So make sure you shop this one around because you can get varying markets.
Yeah, I saw minus 104 here at Circa a moment ago. Awesome stuff as always, Mike. Thanks for doing this.
You got it. Have a good one, guys. We'll take care. We'll see you next week.
That's our guy, Mike Somich. Yes, tune in same time, same place every Thursday, getting the latest from our guy, Mike, at SamaBomb18 on Twitter. Also during racing season, awesome stuff with horse racing, with horse racing at racingdudes.com. We're going to step aside. Final half hour coming up, breaking down Jonathan Von Tobel's model for week one of the NFL season. Where can we as bettors find advantages on that opening week slate, and how to build your own model to figure out how things compare to the odds out there. So it'll be good.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can also check on the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. This is the last weekend that you can sign up at our lowest price of the summer, $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. Rolling along here on the Lombardi Line alongside Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. And for this final half hour, we're really going to hone in on week one of the NFL and kind of how to model and create numbers and what you've put together here.
Okay. I want to start with a statement first off.
Okay.
All right? I am learning how to do this. I wanted to do this because I wanted, much like any good journalist, Stormy, to experience what you're reporting on, right? You know, you want to be there. You want to see this. Modeling is such a big part of the sports betting community, and it is something that has always intrigued me. So I was like, you know what? Let's try this out. Is this going to be something that, you know, am I, you know, I'll say that some of the nerds out there, I use it as a loving term, always like to be like, you know, my model projects this. Am I going to be that guy? Yes. No. But I just wanted
after
to see
today,
what this
today, I am that
right,
guy.
Exactly. Everything about me. I just wanted to see what this was like. And it's a really fascinating process. It's something that I'm not done with by any stretch. You know, we're going to have the numbers and the projections that came out of the model coming up here shortly. But I really want to stress that for me, this is a learning experience. By no means am I somebody who you should call up and say, how do I do this? It was hours and days of books, YouTube videos, all sorts of things, even relearning Excel, right, like at the very minimum, doing all that stuff. So this is very much just an experiment in a learning process for me. And if anybody out there has any tips, I had great conversations on Z about this the other day about what statistics to use and whatnot. This is a learning experience. So I just want to stress that, because I think in today's day and age, like Kelly and I were talking about this, Kelly Bidlin, where like I think there's a segment in sports betting and sports betting Z where you're just kind of like you're afraid to put yourself out there and afraid to experiment on certain things. And I'm not. Like, I'm willing for this thing to kind of get its face kicked in for the sake of learning. And that's what this whole thing was about.
I blacked out for the last 10 seconds of what you said because you're using Z so casually in conversation. Like, everyone knows what the hell you're talking about.
That's what its name is.
It's better than saying I'm on X and I'm having this conversation on X.
Because
that's what I'm saying, because that sounds like it's a drug-induced situation.
I did an interview earlier today.
So unnatural.
I did an interview very early this morning, and the host kept calling me Jonathan Van Tobel, and it drove me nuts.
Oh, no, you hate that.
Hate it. You want to know why? Because my name is Jonathan Von Tobel. So if this is pronounced Z, then you know what? It's pronounced Z.
Okay.
Even though the logo is an X.
I still think we should just call you Von Tobes. It just has a nice ring to it.
You and Chris?
Yes.
Yes, you guys call me that. So.
Yes, it just really
you're the only ones.
Right.
Yes, you guys acted like that was like a common name for me.
Because
no.
It was so obvious when we thought of it that we were like, oh, he must actually be called this from other people.
I don't know if I told you in that day, because we were talking about high school today. My high school name was John Vaughn.
Mm.
So that's what I was called in high school.
Like,
nobody went Von Tobes, though. I was called my first day of summer camp in terms of football going into high school. I injured my big toe, so I was called Toe for a while.
I did know that
circles.
Story.
Yeah, I think I told you that one. So it happens. I wear it with honor.
Speaking of how we do this in the model, though, so like going back to that initial point, I feel like a lot of times we'll be on the show and we'll be talking to a handicapper and he'll say, I made this number 3, I made this number 5, or whatever
sure.
It is. And people at home are always like, okay, but how did you make that number? So for your model, I guess, what was the foundation of that? What was step one?
So if really what we're looking at it, and again, like I think I'm phrasing the statements that I'm about to make correctly. So if I'm not, you know, excuse me and you can correct me. But essentially the way I've learned it and the way that I've set this up is you're asking, the basic premise is, when it comes to home margin of victory, how are these statistics correlated to the home margin of victory? So what I've done is I've taken all the results from last year and I've tied in different statistics. Now, the first time I did it, I just did one. It was a model based on DVOA, total DVOA, and that was it. And it's a really simplistic way to look at it.
For anyone who doesn't know what DVOA is.
Football Outsiders metric essentially, you know, measures just like overall team efficiency. I think it's a really basic way to put it. And so it's essentially asked Excel, tell me how much home and away DVOA is correlated to a home margin of victory. And, you know, Excel does it all for you, right? So it spits back out, tells it to you, you do a little bit of math, and then you get projections for it. So what I've done, and as I've grown, is essentially just added more stats to the pile to try to get a stronger correlation to home victory. And as I've done this, the correlation is getting stronger with the statistics I'm using. Now, down to this point, which I, you know, we have these numbers here, these are 4 statistics that I have used. Again, trying to find the correlation to the home margin of victory. It's DVOA. It's drive success rate. These two are found on Football Outsiders. EPA. And third and fourth down success rate. These are the 4 stats that I have used to essentially come up with these numbers. And I will say this. I know I'm going down the right path. One, because the number in terms of the correlation is telling me it's going up. So I think that's right.
I thought that was cool that you're seeing, like, as you make each adjustment and add something in that you're getting closer to.
And full disclosure, as we were talking about too, I don't know if I showed you, but I told you, like, I'm building an NBA one. That one's down at like 40. Like, I'm nowhere near. So this is not a perfected process. But at the very least, there's that. And Stormy, if you'll notice too, when we show these numbers, there are at least lines that are right in line with where the sports betting market is, right? If every single one of my point spreads that came out of this model was like 6 points off, you've got a problem, right? But at the very least, a lot of these do reflect. So for those who are watching, you know, you see the line that, you know, the model that I made projected out. So some of the bigger edges that are going to be there, at least right now, obviously the model loves the Jacksonville Jaguars, about nearly a 7-point edge there, according to the number that came out from my model as compared to what's out there.
As
from
a Colts fan, did that hurt you emotionally, physically?
No, but I'm not surprised either, because the Colts last year, if you look at a lot of the different metrics that I used, they were either the worst team or like the third or fourth worst team. So I think this is more about not the model being high on Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. It's that this and the statistics I've used, which, by the way, too, I want to stress, all of the statistics I've used are offensive oriented. So I think that's also why. The Colts were one of the worst offensive teams in the NFL last season. So I think they're going to be rated really poorly in this. I'm going to start to add some defensive metrics to see what's going to come around to it. But I think that's why. So I think the model doesn't really like the Colts. As you see, they're a projected 10-point win for the Jacksonville Jaguars by my model. So that's a little off. Now, if I trusted the model, I would say that's a bang-on play right there. We're going to lay that 3.5 with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But you also see that some of these numbers, and this is where I get some confidence from, are right in line. You know, my model projected a 3.05-point win for the Falcons.
Falcons.
It's early.
You've got NBA on the brain, something fierce right now, though.
Because I've also been working a lot of the other ones.
You did do the Hardwood Handicappers podcast this morning. So,
you know, you see Atlanta projected 3-point win by my model, right in line with what the betting market is at. Cincinnati, just under a point win for them. It's right there in line with what the market is there. What's the other one? New Orleans, right in line with what the point spread is. Washington, right in line with what the point spread is. So I think when you're kind of looking at this, I do have some confidence in that there's quite a few of these numbers that are right in line with where the market is. I still think there's some tweaking to do, but it is kind of cool to see some of the returns. And there's also some other massive questions we can get into, and I wanted to ask you. But overall, I'm kind of happy with returns, and I want to see what else we can pour into this to make it a little bit more accurate.
For sure. And going back to the Colts one specifically, too, and in addition to what your model spits out, making some of those other, like, eye test tweaks and stuff, like the Colts are a team that has a whole new coaching staff, and they have a rookie quarterback and things like that that are going to change the way that you look at these numbers. The numbers aren't set in stone.
No, not at all. So let's go to, I think it's the other thing, where the Bills and the Jets game is, because that's the massive example that I think is very much worth pointing out. And you look at this. Yeah, throw that one up for me. So if you look at the bottom, the model for me has a 7.5-point win, essentially, for the Buffalo Bills against the New York Jets.
Well, it's based on data from a year ago.
Correct. So, like, those are the kind of things that, again, for me, this is a learning process. How do I project the growth of the New York Jets because Aaron Rodgers is there? You know what I mean? I'm flat out honest. I don't know how to do that yet. So as I move forward, will I just ignore anything Jets related until I get numbers from this first week of action to then correlate to the Jets and then get a better idea of who they are? Because like you said, this is based on last year. So that's going to be a little bit of a challenge, and just little tweaks here and there, like you're talking about, right? For the Indianapolis Colts, if Anthony Richardson, we talked about this off the air, he's getting every first team snap. If he is an upgrade on what they got at quarterback last year, how do you factor that in into your model and growing forward? So those are some of the questions I still have. I'm still learning on how to do this, but at the very least, I think I'm going down the right path in doing this.
Well, and those two teams, the Jets and Colts, I think are perfect examples of the types of teams that you're not just throwing this model and betting everything that makes sense with your numbers, because you do want to get more of a sample size of what you have on the field this year.
Yes. And also I think an intriguing one too, it ties into Aaron Rodgers. If we could throw this one up again as well, really quickly, Packers Bears. I think that Jordan Love actually might be pretty good. And Aaron Rodgers did not play particularly well for the Green Bay Packers. I think that even though there's been a massive change at quarterback for Green Bay, you can make the argument that this is somewhat accurate because you didn't really get above average quarterback play from Aaron Rodgers a season ago.
I think that's great. Okay, so we know Green Bay is one of them. When we return, we will discuss which of these lines you do feel are actionable at this point. Also, Circa, as of today, within the hour, has added a new betting market here at the Sportsbook that I would like to share with you, and an intriguing bet and sport that we can discuss briefly as we close out things today on the Lombardi Line. You won't want to miss it. Keep it locked right here, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. As we close out one final segment here on this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line, before we continue our NFL model talk, it's time for our pro tip of the show. We do one every single show. Every show here at the network does these. Free daily betting tips on VSiN.com, searchable by sport and by show. But with the preseason officially kicking off today with the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, a general tip here on how to approach some of these preseason games, JBT.
Oh, I have to read this?
It's teamwork. It's okay. Called teamwork.
All right. You got to make sure who will be playing quarterback. You got to make sure you know that in these preseason games. Coaches are typically transparent about who will get snaps, and quarterback depth is an important factor if you're betting preseason games.
You're fired.
What?
Yes.
Well, you don't want to take credit for this. This is Elliot's pro tip, so I don't want to act like it's my pro tip.
It was a communal pro tip. I thought that you were in agreement with it, but this is just based around, generally speaking, in the preseason, depth is important and knowing who's available in these games. And make sure in a lot of these instances that you are listening in to press conferences if you can. Have notifications on for beat writers. Coaches are going to be way more transparent this time of year about who's going to be in these games, the snap counts that they're going to get in these games as well. And today is a perfect example with the Hall of Fame game, because we know for the Cleveland Browns that not only are we not going to get Deshaun Watson, we're also not going to get Josh Dobbs. Kellen Mond is going to start this game. We're going to have Dorian Thompson-Robinson start the second half for Cleveland. In the Jets side of things, no Aaron Rodgers whatsoever. Zach Wilson, we expect him to play maybe a quarter, and then you're going to go down the depth chart from there. But the Jets have stronger general depth at the quarterback position. So things to take into account. VSiN pro tips, VSiN.com.
See, you did a great job.
I just wanted this to be a team effort. I don't know why you don't want to work with me.
Whatever. I mean, I didn't say that.
Come on, man. Thought things were going good. Okay, let's get back to...
going well.
Let's get back to this NFL Week 1 model that you have created. Where do we leave off?
Monster. But we were just talking. I mean, I know. Look, so I'll accelerate the conversation like this. I asked you a question. I told you to think about it at the beginning of the show. Hopefully you did.
I have not.
Which statistics do you think correlate most to a victory in the National Football League? What should I pour into this thing? What should I keep doing?
Well, I think, like, as you continue, because you said that you've done different layers, right? And each step of the way you've added things from just overall efficiency to the in-between stages to now third and fourth down efficiency, I think, was the last thing that you added. So then would you go to, like, red zone numbers? Would you throw that into the model next, potentially? I don't know. What would you look at for?
So,
I mean, you already have like yards per game, like stuff like that's included in overall efficiency. So I don't know what the next stage would
be. So here's my thing. And this is like a really big question overall, which is, so I think in the NFL today, you know, I've made this comparison, which I think the NFL, and people might get mad at this. No, I don't think you will. The NFL is becoming more like the NBA in that deficits are way easier to come back from than they used to be. You know, and we watch the Chargers do it against the Jags. We see it almost all the time. You know, offense is key in the National Football League. The rules are geared toward offense. You know, as a defense, generally defense tends to be random year to year because it just depends on the offenses you're playing, the quarterbacks you're playing, right, as opposed to what you are as a unit. You could have a strong defense, don't get me wrong, but generally defenses bend and acquiesce to the opponents that they face to a certain degree, right? So my question is, how many defensive statistics and metrics should I include in this thing?
Like, is that, could you hone in maybe specifically to like defensive line and points allowed per game?
So there's things like that. You know, Football Outsiders has like adjusted line yards, which is essentially how, you know, a line does, you know, you can do defensive and offensive. So that's like something very much worth looking at. Some sort of pass rush win rate type of deal, I think, is very much worth looking at, right? Because that could be something that correlates to a lot of success. I feel like I want to, and this might be a mistake, I feel like I want to stay away from overall defensive metrics, because again, I feel like there's some noise in there in terms of, like, you know, if you go back and look at last year, for example, for the New York Giants, I think a team like the New York Giants' defensive metrics would look a lot better on paper because of the schedule that they faced, as opposed to some other teams that had to play some of the best defenses in the NFL.
But couldn't
offense.
But I think, like, couldn't you say that for most metrics,
sure,
regardless, that you're playing an easier schedule, so these elements are going to be easier for
you? Yes, you can, but I do think that there is a conversation that good offense, like last in a super general way, what do you think, what would you rather have? Would you rather have a team that has the best offense in the NFL or the best defense?
You'd rather have the best. Even though I know you say defense wins championships, and that adage is what it is.
Yeah, it did in the 1980s.
The game is different, yeah, in 2023. So I would say offense.
You know what I mean? So that's a general way to put it, and that's why this is the W word that I don't know how to do either, which is weighting certain statistics, right? I think, like right now what I'm asking is, these four statistics, how much do they correlate? Boom. But like I want to say, like at one point when I make a model, I want to say, weight EPA a little bit more than you would do with DVOA and things like that. But I think at the end of the day, my version of weighting this would be to include more offensive statistics than defensive statistics, because I believe offense is the driver in the National Football League.
Yeah, so. I would second that. And I would say, if you have anybody out there listening, you have questions, sure. I'm just going to offer JVT up here. At him, at me, JVT.
I was going to say, I want help, not give help.
If you have any question on Z, excuse me, if you have any questions, make sure you zeet at him. I do not like this at all.
Post at me.
But also similarly, if you have any suggestions on what things you think are more valuable in the NFL in 2023 that can benefit this model, make sure you reach out. Before we move on to my little note that I have to close the show, what on your week one model do you think is the best bet to be made based on the numbers you have and the numbers we see at a sports?
So the more I've poured into this, the more, for example, so the top one, I kind of had Kansas City circled. I'm more of the mindset that I think the Lions are a little overvalued. I think that the more statistics I've poured into this thing, the more the point spread or the projected margin of victory for the Chiefs has gone up. So I kind of like the way that's going. What's been consistent in every statistics that I've poured into this is that the Baltimore Ravens clear out as a double-digit victory almost actually every single time. The worst margin is actually this one, the most updated version, which is still at 12.9 points. So I think the Chiefs, I think the Ravens are lines that I wouldn't say no to. I also think when you look around, like one of the questions I also had too was like, let's go to where are we at? Broncos and Raiders, for example. You know, I project this as a one-point Broncos win. Now, again, we're talking about an edge of only about 2.89 points. On its surface, that's not that much. However, you're getting a key-ish number, not a super key number, but you're getting over a field goal with the Raiders. So just because it's not that big of an edge, do I give more credence to that play because I'm getting four? You know what I'm saying? So I think that that's something worth circling potentially when it comes to that play. And I think that was really it. I think there's others that kind of intrigued me as well. You know, Seahawks and Rams is something that's kind of interesting, but only because I think the Seahawks are pretty poor this year. But a lot of it has to do with last year's numbers. Again, as we talked about, and the Rams didn't play that well. Matt Stafford was very hurt. So I think that's overvaluing it. But those are the ones that stuck out, as well as the Green Bay Packers over the Chicago Bears.
Okay, as we close out these last 2 minutes or so here, I mentioned earlier in the show that if you get bored with the Hall of Fame game today, have no fear, Slam Ball is here. Flip over to ESPN2. I'll be on there along with John Triffin broadcasting three games today. And one of the best teams, actually the best team in all of Slam Ball, is in action today. And we have lines live right now at Circa up within the last hour, hour and a half or so. The Mob.
So they got approved, by the way? Gaming approved?
They got approved. Oh. We have them live here in Nevada. I also know BetMGM. I think has them in Arizona and Tennessee right now. So there is some Slam Ball betting odds available out there. The Mob are the lone undefeated team in Slam Ball right now. They are a perfect 8-0, and they are winning by an average points per game differential, 27.4 points per game. The closest win they have had so far has been by 13. Mm. They are a 12.5-point favorite today against the Buzzsaw. And being the lone undefeated team, yes, they have a target on their back, sure. But even in the games that I've seen up close and personal where they have looked vulnerable and they've looked bad, they have just found a way to crush the competition. We do have one previous matchup between the Mob and Buzzsaw where the Mob won 50-31.
Okay.
So while I am not allowed to bet on the Mob, I am very intrigued by this number, and I will say that.
Not the Buzzsaws?
Nope. Singular.
The Buzzsaw.
The Buzzsaw.
Interesting.
But they have the best team by far. No injuries. Everything has gone about as well as it could. And their head coach, Brendan Kirsch, is actually the coach of the Mob that was the initial coach like back in the day in the 2000s as well. He's back and he's got his system. He drafted to his system. They're really freaking good. Also, the Slashers and Ozone going head to head. Slashers, a 7.5-point favorite in that game. That's a wrap for us today. The Lombardi Line back tomorrow. Same time, same place. But you'll have Femi instead of me.